Okay, so we've faffed around for quite a bit already. So you said this story better be good. You said there's a story to go with your microphone.
It's a bike story as well.
Oh.
Because it's not just my microphone, it's my bike. Mike. They're both in the same location.
Both stolen?
Nope.
Well.
Guess the North Wales town where they are.
All right, do we have a clue? Sam did know?
You know, I think it was on the last pod, wasn't it? Because I was in North Wales in the last pod. And I was on the Llyn Peninsula in a little town called Chrw.
You better wipe your screen down again now.
Chrw. Hey, come on. No casual Welsh jokes. Get it in there.
Yeah, I was doing my best, Stu, and he was taking the piss.
I was doing you. It's Matt. Matt was saying that the screen down because of the
casual
double
racism. Eye. Yeah.
The casual racism, yeah, which is still acceptable, apparently, with the English to the Welsh. Casual racism. Right, carry on. So, right, we know.
So, yeah. The story is I left early to come home to work, and Joe and the kids were coming on behind on a couple of days later, and the car broke down.
No.
2 hours into the 7 hour journey home.
So they must have been just about in England.
They were in Bala.
Bala? Oh, they went cross country.
It's the quickest way. It's a beautiful route, and there's a road there. There's a cycling story to tell. There's a road there in the Tanat Valley, just where they were just before the Tanat Valley, which is a road I am yet to ride, and I've driven up there for the last 20 years and I've never stopped to then ride that road, which is an amazing road. Anyway, they broke down there. Car could not come home. Microphone is in car. Bike is also. So where is the nearest place it could get to for an RAC approved garage to get fixed?
From Bala?
Yeah.
Carnarvon?
No.
Queen.
Chester.
No, still in Wales.
Mould.
That's a coid.
Oh no, a bit more built up.
Wrexham.
What did I hear?
Wrexham.
Congratulations.
Oh. No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was gonna go over that way then. I was thinking Oswestry or Wrexham, but yeah.
So how far is that then?
About another 2 hours.
Oh,
2 hours. It's 2 hours from Joe's dad's place, which is where. Yeah. Anyway, it's 5 hours from where I am right now.
I mean, that's obviously terrible, right? Terrible. It broke down and all that. And you haven't got your bike and everything. But I just want to say that your microphone can fit into your bag, in your bag that you took on the train. So there is that to consider, isn't there?
I know. Don't.
He needed his cheese sandwiches, didn't he?
It was quite a full bag. But yeah, I could have probably got it in.
Sorry. Hang on a minute, I'm confused, right? So the car broke down. Now is the car now in Wrexham?
The car has spent the week in Wrexham at the RAC approved garage.
Right.
Being
fixed. Are you going back up to pick it up?
It is being repatriated.
What, they're going to deliver it down to London?
Yeah.
With the bike?
I hope the bike's still in.
Let's see.
On the microphone.
Let's see what's left of it.
Oh god! Yeah, it's been a bit.
Basically, no transport worked unless you went on your bike. Is that right? This whole trip.
The train journey back, we had this little message, didn't we? So your prediction of the trains are a bit screwed up coming back on that route was correct. Yeah. Actually, it took me three trains to get home.
And it should have been direct, yeah.
Direct train, yeah.
Yeah.
Cancelled 15 minutes before I was about to go.
Yep. Yeah, my parents now, as I say, they go there 2 or 3 hours before the train that they're supposed to get. They go to the station to check whether that train is still running, and if not, they readjust their itinerary to get an earlier train, a different train, because it's a lottery.
So I'd love to be, you know, this podcast is obviously looking for sponsorship, so either the RAC or the RAC approved garage in Wrexham, which I can't remember the name of, looking for sponsorship there. But Avanti West Coast Trains, no, they can actually do one.
I may have missed it. Did you say what was wrong with the car?
Fuel injection, something or other, lots of hundreds of pounds.
Ooh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah, ouchie.
Oh, well, yeah. Wrexham, the story there, and about football, but we won't go on to that because this is not a podcast about football.
No, I should say you are listening to For the Love of Pog. a podcast mostly about cycling and not about Welsh towns, including Wrexham, or casual racism, or Avanti West Coast trains. I am here.
Hooray!
Loz is finally here.
Hooray!
Andy is here again.
Woo-hoo.
And Stu is here.
Yay!
Now, since we last recorded, there's been quite a bit of cycling racing. We've had the De Brandt's Appeal, a race you have to go on a training course to learn how to pronounce, but no one in the world knows how to spell, won by Benoit Cosnefroid, as we're now going to call him. We've had a major crash at the Tour of the Basque Country involving not one, not two, but three Tour de France GC hopefuls, Remco Rog and Ving the Merciless, whose TDF appearance still looks in doubt. And then, of course, we had the ultimate cobbled classic, the third monument of the season, Paris-Roubaix, or as Sean Kelly insists on calling it, Paris-Roubaix. We had high hopes for fantastic Fred Wright, and even for little Tommy Pidders, weighing no more than a piece of pavé himself, making his debut. And for Mads Max too, a week on from Flanders, and hopefully with enough recovery in his legs to take on Van der Poel. But alas, no one could match the might of Mathieu, easing away as he did with 50-plus kilometres to go, looking like he was on a Sunday club run in Kent and thinking of the cake he was going to have at the cafe stop. He never looked back, and they never looked like catching him. And there he was again today for the Amstel Goldie Horn race in his very wrong white shorts, but looking like he meant business, with everyone thinking he would sweep all before him. But he never quite got going. And instead, it was little Tommy Pidders taking his chance from a leading group, both animating the race and taking the win. Now, given what everyone thought would happen at Amstel, I thought I'd be ending this particular monologue with a collective moan on behalf of all the riders, really, and probably many cycling fans too, after yet another Van der Poel win, by saying, oh, for the love of Poel. But in fact, I find myself saying, ah, for the love of Pid.
Good.
Very good. We've not used Amstel Goldie Horn. That's the good one.
Did you see what the incredibly short shrift that Pidders gave the pint of Amstel he was given on the podium at the end? The other two on the podium who were can't remember.
Hershey Bar.
Hershey was third, wasn't it? Hershey was second, and then the very well known Tiche Benoot. Yes, very good rider. They both down theirs in one, and Pidders took a little sip, grimaced, and left it. Which, to be fair, is probably what I'd do with a pint of Amstel.
I was about to say,
You don't get to spray champagne over people; you get to spit Amstel over them at the end of the Amstel Gold.
What do you think of the race, though? It was a frustrating race, I thought. I kind of thought Van der Poel would sort of come back at some point and never really got going, did he?
I thought it was a really good race. I thought it was really good. I always remember Amstel Gold every year as being a sort of slightly dull affair that's likely to kind of end up in some sort of minor bunch sprint. But actually, it's not that at all. It's a punchers race, isn't it? And I really liked it.
Well, it always has a bit of a chase at the end, this bit, and it. Yeah, I was surprised he didn't, epically get away like he's done in the big races. But maybe he just couldn't do it this time. But it always seems to come back with some charging group trying to get back, or a bit of an escape. So it was, I thought it was a great race today. Very entertaining.
I like the parkour. Good. I think the parkour, because it just sort of rolls on, doesn't it? And it's sort of never ending. And it's a race that always feels that it's ridden at full gas. And given it's 250 odd kilometres, I want to see more of it. They came in at 80 or 90 kilometres? And really, I thought, annoying. Actually, wow, I really want to see more of this, because it felt like we'd missed out on quite a lot, really.
Was the men's finish different to the women's?
Yeah, it was.
It was, wasn't it?
16 kilometres later, I think.
Right.
Well, I think it might have been the same finish line, but they did a loop, but that didn't include going up the climb again.
Well, that's what I thought, that's what looked the difference,
They did a 16K.
Well, it always used to finish on the Cowberg, it used to finish almost at the top, and then it's sort of a couple of kilometres afterwards. But I thought last year it did finish. Was this the first time that it hasn't finished on the Cowberg for the men then? Because I thought that was a real missed opportunity, because there was a climb before, but it seemed to, it didn't sort of lacked a bit at the end, really.
I think it used to finish just after the Kelberg. Then they extended the bit after that for another K and a half. And I thought that's what the route was. But as Andy says, I think for the men's race, they had another bit after that that kind of looped back around to then finish on the same road, which is a bit weird. But I think they've done that for the last few. I mean, it's facts. Come on,
I know it's facts, but the Kelberg was 18 kilometres to go, which felt like it was too far away.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It worked for Pidders. And, you know, let's face it, that's nice. It was good to see. Good to see a Pidders win.
It was, and he went with sort of the group 35 kilometres to go, and he was always looking to take it on, wasn't he? That was the really exciting thing about it.
He made all the right selections, but did you also see in his interview, he did say, "Oh, I was going to say this is the second time I've won it."
The which one? What do you
they
mean?
Remember? They messed up the finish line, and effectively he did cross the line, what he thought was the line first, but they hadn't put the laser beam for the timed finish at the same spot or something. It was just slightly different. So therefore, the wind went to Van Aert.
Oh, that was right. Yes, I do remember that now. Because he'd gone toe-to-toe at Brabantse with Wout as well, wasn't that same season, I think?
Yeah.
He'd gone toe-to-toe where, Matt?
The Branston Pill. I think we should all four of us have a go at spelling this bloody race. It's impossible to spell. It's impossible to say as well. I've been on the course. I'm gonna have my money back, I think. I've been practicing all day and I still messed it up.
Yeah, it's not worked. Sorry to Dutch listeners. Huge apologies.
Hershey, it's quite interesting seeing him back because he had a massive rise to fame and then he's literally disappeared for the last couple of seasons, hasn't he?
Weren't we talking about that a few pods ago?
We were.
And it's he's a bit of an enigma, isn't he? And he seems to be coming back though. And I wonder whether today because he did very, very well at Liège two or three seasons in a row, didn't he? And he obviously with Liège coming up. He looks like, he'd be a good bet for that, obviously.
Yeah.
He looked very grumpy.
Second to Pog. He did look very grumpy, yeah. Coming second to Pog, obviously, we want, don't we? But he did look very good indeed, yeah.
Yeah, Pog Day. Pog Day next week. When he comes down, when he descends, like, like Muhammad from the mountain from his altitude camp, which it sounds like he's been in forever. To do a race and then presumably goes back to his altitude camp, which is probably wherever he lives, because he'll live in what's the weird little place between Spain and France?
Andorra
or somewhere. Yeah,
I haven't checked this because obviously we don't do these things, but is Van der Poel doing Liège? I'm assuming
yes.
Not.
I think they did say on the commentary today whether he was. I had more of an eye on Liège rather than this. No, there was the interview with Cato Kwiatkowski, wasn't it? He talked about Pog doing Liège, I think.
Lovely, Matt. I really like that interview. I thought he's just always comes across as being such a nice guy, Kwiatkowski.
He does, yeah.
Or Kwiatkowski, as Carlton Kirby calls him.
Yeah. Well, a Pog versus Pol next week would be interesting, wouldn't it?
That could be a big show.
Good matchup.
Yeah. Do you want to have a bit of reflection though on Paris Roubaix, as Sean Kelly insists on calling it?
I want to hear Stu.
I was going to say I want to hear if Stu's watched any of these races over the last 2 weeks.
No, but the one thing I would like the one thing well I might have watched one or two a couple of weekends ago, but I was in the background. I wasn't really sort of sat down like you guys. I saw your messages coming through. But the one thing I would like to discuss, which I'm surprised you guys haven't picked up on, was the women's race and the finish. I mean, this is quite astonishing.
Oh, very good point, Shu.
It's all over it. It'd be like the headline. But this is quite astonishing. And it's almost like goes down as one of those moments in sport where you don't often see people celebrating the win before they've won.
It is quite common though. It does happen at least once a season. There's been some absolute corkers. Yeah, Today's was an absolute
was a particularly bad.
So this was should explain, yeah, should we? This was Loretta Webers, who was had rode a beautiful race. There's a sprinter from SD Works. And Capecchi had done all the work for her, and yeah, she judged the sprint beautifully, and then with probably 3 meters to go, wasn't it? Raised her arms in the air, and Marianne Vos beat her on the lunge for the line. It was and it must have been live. You thought, oh, she's not got that; she's messed it up. And then it was really obvious, wasn't it, from the replay? There was half a wheel.
Yeah, it was a tire rim just about that she got pipped by, but she didn't lunge. She was standing. You know, she was off. She was like, you know, arms off the handlebar, celebrating, as you said, you know, arms in the air. And Boss nipped in there by a tire width, and she blew it.
But you just that race, there were so many coming to the line. It was a really great race. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. Because you thought the group were going to make it, and they all came back together again. And yeah, brilliant to have the sprinters in the mix as well. But it's just so obvious. You know, you can celebrate. Put your hands up. You get the same photograph if you're celebrating like 1 meter after the line. But why would you not have the awareness that in such a group like that, someone's going to be right next to you?
I thought it was odd. Yeah, in a sprint. I mean, okay, have a quick look behind, you've got 50 meters, then fair enough. But with a sprint, I don't know why you wouldn't go straight to the line. I didn't understand why she moved to the centre of the road, because with Vos coming up on the left-hand side of her, she could have just stayed exactly where she was and there wouldn't have been a gap to Vos. She gave her the gap. I didn't really get that at all. Because you surely just stick to the side of the road. I didn't really understand that at all. She probably just thought, I've got this. You know, there's no way she's going to come alongside me now. But it was a beautiful sprint. I mean, it was a really great race. You're right. The women's race was a better race than the men's, really. Mm. And the group was away. What was it? 10 kilometres to go. They had a minute on them, and they sort of just brought them back gradually. I think because it finished on the Cowberg, it was kind of had that grandstand finish. Mm. It was all set up for that, wasn't it? Really.
There's not many sports where you see them celebrating before the one. You see it in athletics, don't you, as well? And occasionally you see it in rugby with people over the try line and do a, you know, like a what do you call it, a stupid dive and drop the ball or something. But there's not many of the sports where the people are doing that and then cock it up. But Lars, you say it happens once a season, yeah, at least.
There's been quite a few, you know.
Was it Liège where Alaphilippe?
Yep.
Yes. And Roglified him just by again exactly the same thing on the throw, because he threw and Alaphilippe had his arms aloft.
Yeah, that's another good one.
Is that a fact? Is that a fact? Yeah,
this is an actual fact. Correct fact.
Oh my gosh, we're getting better, aren't we?
That was Alaphilippe in the rainbow jersey, I think, as well, wasn't it?
Oh,
it could have been, yeah.
And I think Pog was there, and it was Hershey Bar. So that was the four of them, I think, going to the line.
Yeah.
It was, I was going to think it was even worse, but maybe it wasn't as bad as...
No, I think this was quite a bad one, because she just looked so completely confident in the win as well. Oof.
It's a great picture on the BBC website. It's a great shot the photographer's got of her celebrating, the joy in her face, the relief. And then you can just see next to her the lunge, and it's, iconic picture, I think.
Every shot they had afterwards, after Vos had got it, they kept going back to Vibas and she was just in tears. Everybody was trying to console her. She was all over the place. Yeah.
Oh, God.
But didn't you say, Andy, who was on the front? Vollering had done all that work for her.
Vollering pulled it back, like you say, because it was a good grandstand finish, because there were 30 seconds getting into the Cowberg, and then they'd pull it back right to, you know, right at that last minute. And then, she did so much to grab the last few metres, and then thought, right, set you up, brilliant, there you go. And then she didn't deliver. But I'm pleased with Vos, though. I do like Marianne Vos. She's absolutely incredible. 20 years she's been doing this.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was a good race. I thought they were both good races. You know, not predictable. And I take everything back I said about the Amstel Gold to you on Friday, whenever it was we were talking about it, Stu. It was good. Really good race. And looked beautiful as well. All the trees, you know, freshly leaved trees all through this rather nice rolling countryside in southern...
I'm pleased for you, Andy.
Netherlands. Thank you.
Right, do we do one of any reflections on Paris-Roubaix then?
No. It's too long ago now. I can't remember what happened. I mean, this guy, the Van der Poel guy, won by a long way.
I just remember feeling annoyed by it now. That's all I remember feeling about it. I look forward to it a lot and then think, oh, okay. You know, 53 kilometres to go. It was the when he went on whatever pave section it was, and Mads Pedersen was that second wheel, and he didn't go with him. I thought, well, that's it. You've just lost the race there. You didn't. You could have just jumped across and tried to get on his wheel, and he didn't, and that was it. He was just gone, wasn't he? And away he went.
But it is incredible that he had. I mean, he had no mechanicals. Yeah, for that length of time, that distance, and he has no mechanicals. And the people behind him were having mechanicals, and you think it's luck as well, you know. But he was so far ahead by the end.
It's a hard, hard race. Oh, look at the state of Pidcock's hands when he was riding this week from riding Roubaix over all the cobbles. You know, they were all cut.
Again, the women's was probably the better race, really, for drama and for competitiveness. And then I actually think Marianne Vos messed that up because she on the track, when they got into the track, she did start the sprint, and then Capecchi was boxed in. And then actually she moved out, which allowed Capecchi to have a gap to go for in the last 100 metres, which is a bit of a mistake. But good to see a third place for Pfeiffer Georgie for GB.
She was doing well again today, wasn't she?
She was. I thought she might get a podium again today. Nearly got there.
Now, I mentioned quite a few other races at the beginning. Is anyone want to pick anything out? Andy, I think you wanted to talk about Jan Christen, didn't you?
Well, he was amazing in the Italian one. Giro d'Abruzzo, which is only four stages. Nice race, third tier. Nice race. He looked very strong, really impressive contribution to the race. I guess the other big thing, which is going to have a big impact on the rest of the season, is the crash at the Tour of the Basque Country, which I saw happen live. And the two things I kind of took away from that was, one is the coverage was horrific, and they should have stopped. You know, they were kind of reveling in it, the kind of directors or producers of the TV pictures, and they should have gone away from it. It was pretty grim stuff. But the other thing was, there's been a lot talked about and written about the cause of it, and, you know, all sorts of hand-wringing about, you know, whether they're now too fast, whether the disc brakes mean that they break too late, or, you know, whether the surface was wrong or whatever. But actually, it was just a very unfortunate. I just think it was bad luck. Because this one guy lost his front wheel, and that caused a whole load of people to come down behind him. Funny, it's not at all funny, but Remco's contribution to that was he didn't seem to be involved, but he just kind of went straight on and carried on into the forest rather than going round the bend.
He did a marvellous bunny hop
over a rock, and then obviously just came off and broke his shoulder or whatever, wasn't it?
Yeah, I watched it live too, actually, and it looked so innocuous. And then you thought, oh, a few riders have gone down. Then you realised who it was. And then obviously you saw them motionless on that sort of concrete slab, wasn't it? And you thought, oh, my goodness, has something really serious happened here? Because they just weren't moving. And they took ages to move Ving, didn't they? And I thought, maybe that's a career-ending injury, because it looked nothing.
Yeah, it looked horrible.
But he's still, apparently, I think, still in... Well, he was in hospital a long time.
Yeah.
Broken collarbone and... ribs, I think, as well, it was just one of those things, wasn't it? It just happened to take down three of the GC contenders for the tour, which is sort of a shame. In fact, Lotta, you posed the question: does this is the season of seasons already over because of this? Didn't you?
Well, just to finish up on the innocuousness of where it went down, but surely in terms of rider safety, that. Overflow drainage ditch or whatever it was ridiculous, and they had some local people talking about how dangerous that corner was, and they didn't really put anything on it. So why there was no barrier or having somebody on the corner pointing to make sure they knew that corner was tight, because, you know, that concrete ditch was enormous. So you know, it, and nothing there, nothing at all in terms of a barrier or anything. So, you know,
apart from a few large rocks scattered around it, just to make it slightly
just
worse,
to make it even harder.
I mean, I think arguably it could have been protected, but I just think they go around hundreds of corners like that every season.
But not with a ditch maybe, but a massive concrete ditch.
Concrete
just
storm
point.
Drain.
Yeah,
maybe. I don't know. You have a look. You have a look what's on the, I mean, you don't really notice it normally, but what's on the kind of outside of hairpins and tight corners. And, you know, some pretty horrific stuff because it's just the way roads are. I just think it was unlucky, very unlucky.
But yeah, sorry. My question was because obviously we were bigging up this season of what the tour was going to offer. Mm. And now it looks like it's really not, but don't know. I think they'll get back, but it won't be the, all the main riders, all the kind of four we were hoping for in their fittest capacity to race, which would be a shame.
Well, even with Wout as well, because obviously Wout being out of the Giro, out of Flanders, out of Roubaix, so even those races have been affected by injuries as well, haven't they?
Perhaps they'll all do the Vuelta now, literally every single one of them. And it'll be so tempting that even Pog won't, having already done two Grand Tours.
Yeah.
He won't be able to resist doing it either. So it literally will be the best. I love the Vuelta, as you know, it's my favourite of the three. And that could be amazing, couldn't it? They'll all want to do the Vuelta.
Good point. Yeah.
Sepp Kuss, poor Sepp Kuss, therefore, because he won't really seriously be able to defend his title, will he? But,
yeah. Or they'll all take each other out in the Vuelta as well.
Oh, and, God forbid.
May not happen because we've got the Olympics, haven't we, as well?
Yeah, that's
the only thing. Mm. Any more on any of the racing then?
Stu?
Afraid not on the racing, though. We could talk more about cycling safety, because the points you raised there actually made me think differently about it all, actually. But maybe we save that for another episode.
Now, I'm not sure whether this is bike versus car or policy parlour, but Andy, I think you want to update us on all things Hammersmith Bridge again.
Again.
Set the scene for us.
Well, I live in Hammersmith, as you know, and I live quite close. I can see the bridge if we lean out of our window. And it's a beautiful old bridge. And it's been, apparently, according to press reports this week, it's been closed for 5 years now. But it hasn't actually been closed. It's been closed for one of those 5 years. What people mean when they say it's been closed for 5 years, it's been closed to traffic for 5 years. Mm. But you've been able to walk across it, and for quite a lot of that time, cycle across it as well. And there's quite a few of us in the area. I hope this doesn't annoy anybody, any listener. I mean, chances of that fairly slim, let's be honest. Any local listener to West London too much, but there's, you know, quite a few of us locally are kind of trying to secure it as a permanent walking, cycling, and probably some sort of free pedicab to link the bus service bridge. Because I hope you can't hear that, because it's my sister calling in the middle of. Does she not know I'm talking about Hammersmith Bridge?
Wasn't it ridiculously in the news because they had some Conservative councillors that had a tea party to celebrate this sort of mock fifth anniversary? Is that right?
Well, I don't single out any decision maker on this one, but they all do the same thing. So the Labour leaders of the Labour lead Hammersmith and Fulham Council, they control Hammersmith and Fulham Council. Lib Dems control Richmond Council on the other side of the bridge. And the Conservatives are, you know, obviously trying to stoke it a bit because they see some electoral advantage in it. But they all do the same thing, which is, you know, none of them are willing to say, actually, this thing's never going to take traffic again. So we might as well make the best of it, which is, to be honest, what they should say really now, because it's not going to. I mean, the latest quoted price to get it reopened to traffic, which would also take a long time, is £250 million. Which, you know, in the grand scheme of things is a huge amount of money in the kind of, you know, kind of government expenditure terms. But nobody's willing to stump up the cash. So it's not going to happen. And even if they stump that cash up, I don't think it's at all clear that it would be reopenable from a civil engineering point of view. So, you know, so I think they're all equally equally to blame for kind of creating a monster by continually pretending it's going to take cars again when it isn't. It just isn't going to happen. That's my take. After 5 years of it not being closed.
I think you've stunned everyone into silence.
In summary, I like it.
Do you want more? I could give you more.
No, I was waiting for everyone to chip more. In.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I think what I read about it, Andy, you've summed it up nicely there. Too much money, another 5 years. It's a political pawn, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know, just open it up to pedestrians and cyclists. How much would it cost to build a new bridge, if that was even possible?
Well, that's another favourite kind of trope. That's more of a kind of next door, angry people on next door trope. That is, oh, why don't you just knock it down and build another bridge? Be cheaper, but you know, it's a heritage structure. You can't just take it out. Lots of people love it locally. It caused huge controversy. So I think that's not an option. You could have another bridge, but then you've got to build new approach roads. There's no obvious place to put it. I think the biggest single problem that they have to solve, which is why I mentioned the pedicab thing, but there are other ways of doing it, is that used to be a bus service go across. And of course, if you can't walk very far, if you've got mobility problems, you can't walk very far, you know, which is something I understand very well at the moment, and you can't cycle, then, you know, you need some way of connecting that bus service up again. And of course, it's harder to get a bus across it than it is a car, really, because it's much heavier. So apart from that, I think that's a solvable problem, but it's not solvable if you're committed to preserving the kind of illusion that it's going to reopen to traffic. That's it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thus concludes the Sunday night monologue.
The Hammersmith lecture.
Right. I'd actually put another item here about Loz's York to London. I don't know whether you wanted to talk about it, Loz. Do we want to hear about Loz's York to London?
Yes.
Okay.
I would love to, yeah.
Now, I hear you're going on you're doing a long bike ride soon, aren't you, Loz?
I'm back on the bike doing a long bike ride, yeah. I haven't done one for a while.
If you've got to get your bike back first.
This is the point, Andy. So...
That's true. When is this bike ride?
Well, the high drama is that I go on the 20th. Hold on, what's the date? 24th of April from Trafalgar Square.
Don't your car would have cleared customs yet? From Wales into England?
Possibly not.
More casual race.
It could break down as repatriation back to London. I don't know. Yeah. 24th, we start from outside Trafalgar Square, outside the National Gallery, which is the gallery to gallery ride. We're going from the gallery in, obviously, National Gallery in Trafalgar Square up to the York Gallery. A bunch of people that I work with and contractors that have been working on this big building project at the National Gallery, 300 and a bit miles, 3 days. But yeah, I mean, I've done a few longer bike rides, but not for a while, not for a good 2 or 3 years. So tried to do some. I've been training a fair bit, but not as much actually out on the road. And now I don't have a bike, literally not out on the road at all this last week. But that was what I was riding in Wales a bit for, to get some miles in. So yeah, looking forward to it. Unless the weather turns, then it could be quite punchy.
Now, you skipped over the route there. 300 odd miles over 3 days. Is it a meandering route or is it a direct route? Where are you going?
It's London to Huntingdon and Huntingdon to Lincoln. They've just sent us the route. I haven't even looked at it, to be honest. I'm just going to follow.
Is it one of these ones where it's like one of these place to place records? So there is an official route that everyone does if they're doing London to York.
No, to Edinburgh,
or you know, Land's End, John O'Groats is like an official route.
No, this is a made up route. This is just for charity. It's a made up route.
Uphill and down dale.
Yeah. I'm not sure.
Well, that reminds me. Actually, you did send a link out to sponsor you. Maybe our listener can sponsor you too. Can you resend that link? I completely forgot to sponsor you.
I will do, Stu.
Would you like me to put it in the show notes?
Yeah, you can do. That'd be nice.
It's what's your target? What's your target figure?
$2,000.
Oh my God, you're going to smash that now we put it on this podcast.
Well, especially if you're at 1,995 or something.
Yeah, no, there's always still room. There's still room.
What's the challenge of the cause?
It's the National Brain Appeal. Do a lot of work for looking into neuroscience in terms of supporting people with brain injury and lots of other effects of the brain.
Of course, it's all great that you're doing that, and good luck. But obviously, we need lots of field notes for the episodes, won't we?
I'll try and get some in. Yeah.
If we were a proper podcast, then obviously what you'd do is like a side shoot podcast of your whole experience over the course of 3 days. Did you do that for us?
We can make those separate shows. Just drop them in the feed. Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
We give them a special name, like a sub-brand, for the love of something, for the love of York. Or...
And we'll get our thinking caps on for that. Because you've got a lot of time on the bike to give that some thought as well. We want daily dispatches now. So what we want, the day before, obviously, and all that, you know, the morning of the ride, and then the actual ride itself, a review at the end of each day, little, you know, 5 to 10 minute monologues, be great. Yeah. I think you should definitely do it.
There's about 20 riders going, so I could do some interviews at the beginning. Yeah. That's 20 listeners, potentially.
We could build
our listener base through doing this, you know, some new people.
They'll have to listen at least once if they've contributed, won't they?
Yeah.
We'll call it For the Love of Loz.
There you go.
For the Love of Loz. Brilliant. And do you think you'll ride into it like a Theo Gegenhardt over a Grand Tour? Or do you think you'll be more of a kind of trying to think of a rider who'll fade towards the end? Do you think you'll ride in? By day three, you'll be absolutely on song and kind of.
Well, I've done one. I rode London to Amsterdam. That's the only other time I've done a consecutive day's ride. Have you ever done consecutive day rides?
Yeah, a couple of times, but I was absolutely killed me. And by the day three, I was hopeless.
But by day three, I'm in the zone. I think it's I think you do get into
You're
it.
A
bit of a tail.
Yeah.
I've done three of those. I've done three Londres Paris. On a tandem.
Ooh.
And what they did, this was a charity ride like yours, they had to split people into different groups. And the way they split them initially was just by looking at the bike you brought with you. So if you're like, you know, you bought an expensive, you know, road bike with all the gear, they'll put you in group one. If you bought like a shopper, you're in group four. But then, of course, they quickly assessed it. When we got there in our tandem, they put us in group four, but they realised we were too powerful for that. So we quickly moved up into group one by the end of day one. By day three, everyone was in our slipstream. We were powering ahead. they wanted to get behind us.
Creates a huge hole in the air.
Here comes the tandem.
The tandem. They wanted to get behind the tandem boys. Because we were punching a hole through that air. And we actually broke a couple of riders because we were setting the pace so high. But of course, anything hilly, we were useless. It was like an articulated truck trying to get up a hill. So we're not good on the hills. But downhill, crikey, you had to hold on for your dear life because, you know, you're thinking, oh, God, the brake's going to fail here. But yeah.
Front or back?
It's good fun.
I don't think I've ever ridden a tandem.
It's great fun. I was always in the back. The power, but you could really enjoy the scenery as well. You know what I mean? You didn't need to look where you were going.
Isn't the back quite scary though? Because you're not in control on the back, presumably.
You have to have faith in each other. We had a couple of arguments.
Yeah, trust.
I didn't like his gear technique. I had to pull him over and have a little chat with him. I want the cadence the same as Ed. I don't want you you're chugging the gears too quickly or too slowly. All that cadence, that right. rhythm, nice and smooth. One, two, three, change. One, two.
Oh, what? Stu's all about the souplesse.
Yeah, so it's always called souplesse.
Well, that's more your cycling, your cadence, really, and your footwork, isn't it? Your souplesse.
Yeah.
Pedal stroke.
Just smoothness.
Pedal stroke, yeah, exactly.
Be quite funny if they all turned up, apart from you, in the same club jersey.
Yeah.
Sort of a bit of a warning
I
sign.
I feel like a bit of a... Yeah, totally look like a bit of a... Join the wrong group.
Well, you could just stick on the back. You'd be fine. Hardly pedal.
Just hide, yeah. Just hide and then go for... Each day, hide, and then just do a sprint finish just to annoy everybody.
Sprint finish into Lincoln on day two.
Arms in the air.
Not too early. Well,
over celebrating.
You joke, but you know, people do come off, break collarbones, get punctures, get lost, you know, get tired. And then all of a sudden, if you're on your own, it's not a particularly pleasant experience, is it? If you're stuck somewhere, you know, on a main road, whatever, and it's lashing down with rain, you've got a puncture, and all the team people on the tour have piled on ahead. So be careful. Watch out.
I will. Well, that would just be more content though, won't it? You know.
It will be. You won't be alone, Loz. We'll be with you, and our listeners will be with you too. We'll all be with you.
Thanks, Andy.
We're looking forward to all the content you're going to be producing, yes. All the gold.
Yeah.
Well, does anyone have any A or B?
Well, I don't, but I've got a question.
So, okay, hold that then, hold that. Stu, any A or B?
Not for me, thank you, Matthew.
Andy?
No, not for me, thank you,
could you, Andy, could you give us a one sentence on your hip condition?
Well, that was my question.
Ah, so right, okay. Close back to you, A or B?
My only A or B, really, is an update on the hip, Andy.
Oh, yeah. It's going very well, thank you. I was out for a walk today on one crutch, so the first one crutch walk I've done. Which is just so much easier. I didn't feel like the leg would support it before, but getting more confident by the day. And at some point this week, I'm going to step onto the static bike and just start to turn the pedals. I won't put any force through because that would be a mistake, but I'm just going to see if I can get the leg rotating, which I should be able to. That should be absolutely fine. And then... We're on to phase two of recovery, really, which is trying to get back on the bike. But it's going really well, thanks. No, I'm not taking any painkillers. So it's amazing, really, because it's 3 weeks, 3 weeks tomorrow. And no painkillers, largely pain-free, you know, a bit stiff, swollen round the wound and stuff, as you might expect. But, you know, it's going pretty well, thanks.
That sounds absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Incredible. Talking of content, I do think that there's content right there. The first pedal strokes. I think you need to record that.
Live from the static bike.
Yeah. as he screams in agony.
Yeah, as I scream in agony and it dislocates.
No, too soon. Yeah. No.
Quick, morphine.
Painkillers, please.
Yeah, exactly. I shouldn't have done that.
Josephine!
Well, I have a bit of A or B. You're obviously not surprised to hear that, are you?
No.
Okay. Very brief. This may be the first of a new feature. I was inspired by Loz's York to London, actually. I read a lot of cycling books, right?
Okay.
Mainly about other people riding bikes. And I wanted to recommend one. Sort of recommendation corner, or recommendation thing, called The End to End by Paul Jones. And it is all about the Land's End to John O'Groats record. And he calls it a tale of obsession, hallucination, and happiness. And it's kind of part social sort of cycling history of John O'Groats to Land's End, Land's End to John O'Groats, sorry. And part his sort of love affair with it and the way that he rides it over a number of months. And he sort of wants to sort of find himself. He's a former teacher, and it's a tale of how he sort of lost his job and then wants to find another job, and his relationship with his family, and interviewing also people who did this incredible, you know, broke the records for Land's End to Johnna Groats, and it's highly recommended. So it's End to End by Paul Jones.
Sounds good.
There you go.
Sounds good.
We'll look at it.
There are quite a lot of those books around, aren't there?
There are. So I've read a lot of them. So this one stood out to me because I have read a lot, and some of them aren't that great because they're just sort of diaries. But this is a bit different. So he takes the sort of the social history of time trialing, really, how it all started in England, and the Road Racing Association. They hold the records. So I asked you about London York, because these place-to-place records exist for all these different races. So London-Edinburgh is the classic one. And I was asking you whether you're on the official route, because I'm sure London to York is part of that route.
That's a good point, yeah.
So they'll have those sort of short ones. So there is an official Land's End to Johnna Groats route now that most people do if you're going for the record. And the record's ridiculous. It's less than 2 days. And a guy called Mike Broadwith holds it for men. I've forgotten who holds it for the women. I've already forgotten after reading this book. But there's a whole sort of subculture of people who go out there and support. Really? When a record is attempted, all these people come out of the woodwork and support every single attempt. And every single attempt is logged and all that sort of stuff. But they have records for all these place-to-place rides. So, yeah, it's a whole...
Where are these... So when you say there are records, and where would you find the actual... route.
The Road Race Association.
Okay.
So the RAA website, yeah. So I don't know whether one exists for London, York.
I'll have to look it up, yeah.
Oh, is this going to be a record attempt now then? This is even better.
Shit.
Fantastic. Well, we're all going to look that up now, aren't we?
Well, I look forward to your support on the road.
Well, we are. We'll definitely be supporting you. Well, we don't need to be there in person, Loz. We're supporting you. What's the publisher of the book, Matt? I'm just thinking of, you know, potentially giving it such strong recommendation.
Well,
Little Brown is published by
Little
Brown.
There's already been a child recommending this book.
There's already been a what?
On Amazon, End to End, which is a tale, this same book, Paul Jones. A really great read, fascinating, moving. Adrian Childs.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So, I'm afraid another Childs, who we know very well, Adrian Childs, Paul Custer.
Yes.
Not very well, but we know him, has beat you to it, I'm afraid.
Wow. Maybe I should go on Amazon and add my own little one to Adrian there, shouldn't I?
Well, that'd be funny. Yeah, do that. Nice cover. Very stylish cover.
It's a very nice cover, yeah. It is not... It's one of those books where there's a lot about him and a lot about the ride, but I kind of wanted more. So it was kind of left me wanting more, really. And I want to find out a bit more about the record. So it was good in that sense, but I wish he'd almost gone a bit further about himself. He does delve into his personal life and the reasons why he became a bit obsessed with the ride. But yeah, highly recommend.
We had a bit of a spat of reading these books. Do you remember the first one we read? Do you remember? It was a former journalist who's... This is quite sad because his wife had brain tumour, didn't she?
It was Matt Seaton.
Matt Seaton, that was it.
Yeah, the escape artist.
Yeah. I mean, we had some thoughts about that, didn't we?
I'm a bit conflicted about that book.
Yeah.
But it did kickstart a fascination with reading about other people riding their bikes.
Yeah.
So I do have lots of them on my shelf that I'm looking at here. So,
well, the best one is the guy, and I mean, I love this, but I read a lot in lockdown, which is, and I've completely forgotten his name now, The Man Who Cycled In From the Cold, is it that one? And the Geronimo, who recreates, does crazy long-distance riding. What's his name? Fax, see, we're on Fax now, aren't we?
Tim Moore. Yeah.
Tim Moore. Thank you.
Just seeing who could get to Google quick enough.
No, I'm looking on the shelf because I've read all of it.
Yeah.
So he's written one about the Tour de France, and he's written... So he wrote French Revolutions, and then he wrote Giro, and then he wrote Welter Skelter.
And then
The Man Who Came In From the Cold.
Their social history books, they're just amazing, I think. I think he's a brilliant writer. But The Man Who Came In From the Cold, I thought was an incredible book.
That was cycling down the length of the Iron Curtain.
On a German happy shopper.
He also wrote He wrote one on crossing America in a Model T Ford during the first Trump presidency.
Oh, did he?
which was that's pretty amazing as well. Yeah, yeah. Tim Moore is I do love him. Brilliant writer, brilliant travel writer. Well, this item has become a lot longer than I thought. This is a
there you go.
But there's a whole we've got.
We turned it into book club here. It's a cycling book club.
Yeah, that's right. It's another spin-off for the Love of Pod Book Club.
Well, maybe we should all be reading one in between. Edition. Maybe that's what we do. Maybe we should all go and read end to end and then have a follow-up chat about it.
Well, yes. Why not?
That's a good idea for a podcast, isn't it?
Right. I'm looking at the clock. Should we call it a day then, chaps?
Yeah, yes. I think we should. Yeah.
We should.
Shall we say bye to the listener?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, listener.